How God Deals with Sinners. That's next on The Balanced Word with Pastor Dave Rolfe.
If you want to see what a sinner looks like, you can look at this description of Manasseh and you'll find out, okay, somebody who completely goes against everything that God stands for, then well, that would be Manasseh. And when we see how God deals with Manasseh, we get a picture of how God feels about sin. We get a picture of how God deals with sinners. And I'll tell you, it's a good thing for us to understand this because, number one, we are surrounded by sinners. And number two, we all are sinners. But in seeing how God deals with the extremeness of Manasseh's sin, we get an image of God's view of sin and how he deals with sinners.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand and the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
When it comes to dealing with sin, we're either too hard or too lenient. Lenient on ourselves and hard on others. But how does God deal with sinners? That's the subject today on The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We've been studying the Old Testament book of 2 Chronicles lately, and we come today to chapter 33. It's there we encounter King Manasseh. He's been dubbed the most notorious sinner in the line of kings. To introduce this king to us from 2 Chronicles chapter 33, here's Pastor Dave.
You know, there's a lot of talk for us as believers about sin. And sometimes I think people get a misunderstanding about what sin really is. We know that sin is doing things that separate us from God, but often our concept of sin is that a person who, you know, it's almost like God has arbitrarily decided you can do these things and you can't do those. And if you do the ones that God says not to do, he's going to punish you. But that's really not the idea, and God's not arbitrary in what he describes as rules for living. It's true that sinning is going against what God tells us to do, but the fact is it doesn't become a sin because God says it. God says it because it's a sin. See, God created us, and he knows us better than anyone else does, and he knows what's going to be good for us, and he knows what's going to be hurtful for us. And so he warns us and says, if you do these things, it's going to destroy you. It's going to be painful. You're going to hurt. And so he's trying to keep us from doing things that will destroy ourselves, and he calls that sin. He tells us about other things that he knows are going to be good for us, and he says, if you do these things, you'll be blessed as a result. See, he's not trying to just be mean, and he doesn't want to punish us for what we do. He warns us of the consequences of what will happen if we don't walk in fellowship with him. Living by his guidelines to life, living by the standards that he has by which we should live. In chapter 33 of 2 Chronicles, we have the life of a man named Manasseh, who, if you're talking about sinners, Manasseh had it down. The children of Israel had been divided into two nations, really. The 10 tribes up in the north, their capital was Samaria, and the two tribes down in the south called Judah, and their capital was Jerusalem. And both nations really did a pretty horrible job after this nation was split after their civil war. But some were better than others of these kings. Most of the kings in the north were pretty bad. Some of the kings in the south, though, were pretty decent. And in fact, Manasseh's father, Hezekiah, was one of the better kings, brought about a lot of reforms and all. But his son Manasseh, when he took over, became probably the worst king in the history of Israel. If you want to see what a sinner looks like, you can look at this description of Manasseh and you'll find out, okay, somebody who completely goes against everything that God stands for, then well, that would be Manasseh. And when we see how God deals with Manasseh, we get a picture of how God feels about sin. We get a picture of how God deals with sinners. And I'll tell you, it's a good thing for us to understand this because, number one, we are surrounded by sinners. And number two, we all are sinners. But in seeing how God deals with the extremeness of Manasseh's sin, we get an image of God's view of sin and how he deals with sinners. Well, let's begin reading at verse 1. It says, Manasseh was 12 years old when he became king, and he reigned 55 years in Jerusalem. But he did evil in the sight of the Lord, according to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. He became king when he was only 12. Most 12-year-olds, frankly, aren't really equipped to run a nation. But there were some young kings who did pretty well if they had good advice. And you go, how could a 12-year-old be all that evil? You've never been around junior hires, have you? But here, it's interesting, too, though, that Manasseh reigned for 55 years, longer than any other king in the north or the south in the history of Israel. But he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He acted like the people that God had overthrown in order to put them into place. And here it begins to describe that lifestyle. For he rebuilt the high places which Hezekiah his father had broken down. These high places were places where they would go to worship pagan gods. And Hezekiah, his dad, had really cleaned things up and said, we're not going to do that. We're going to worship the true God. And he tore down all these idols. But like so many kids when they're growing up, they think their parents don't know anything. They figure, oh, dad's being a fuddy-duddy. He's old school. There's a new way. Come on, we need to get back and we need to do this. And so he began to reinstitute idol worship in Israel, rebuilding these places. You know, the good things his dad did, he undid them right away. It's interesting how often it's difficult for a movement of God to pass from one generation to the next. It happens, but it's going to happen because God does something really mighty. The rule is that kids don't want to be like their parents, and so at least often for a number of years, they rebel against their parents, and that includes rebelling against God. A relationship with God isn't something that you can just have passed down to you. It's something that you need to find personally, and he certainly didn't. Well, he made these altars of Baal, pagan gods, and he made wooden images, and he worshiped all the host of heaven and served them. So he not only built these idols up, he looked at the sun, the moon, and the stars, and he began to worship them and make them into gods. He began to follow his astrological chart to see what implication that might have. People today are still doing this. There are people who make every life decision based on the alignment of the stars when they were born compared to now. And you look at it and go, boy, that's crazy. But the problem is it's looking to something other than God to lead and guide you. I personally lost interest in astrology when I discovered that my sign was Cancer. I just thought, this can't be good. But King Manasseh got into that. But it goes on. Not only was he serving the hosts of heaven, he also built altars in the house of the Lord. He corrupted that place of worship by bringing idolatry right into the house of the Lord, of which the Lord had said, in Jerusalem shall my name be forever, corrupting that place that God had set aside. And he built altars for all the hosts of heaven in the two courts of the house of the Lord. It would be like having, you know, in our tape lending or our tape giveaway or selling or whatever we do with those tapes, room and saying, hey, you can come by after church and we'll give you your horoscope. Or we'll start putting horoscope in the bulletin. That's good. He's confusing this pagan belief and superstition, really, with a belief in God. And milking it for all it was worth, right there in the house of the Lord. But it gets worse yet in verse 6. Also, he caused his sons to pass through the fire in the valley of the son of Hinnom. The valley of Hinnom, right outside the walls of Jerusalem, was a place where they worshiped the god Molech. Molech was an Ammonite god. And he was the god of the sun. He was the god of fire. Whenever they saw fire, they felt it was connected to this god Molech. The way that they celebrated Molech specifically was usually brass, because brass, you make it from fire, and then it when a flame shines off of it, it's very impressive. And so they made these brass gods of Molech, and these brass gods had arms that stuck out, and they would put a fire underneath this little Molech god there in the Valley of Hinnom, which is, by the way, where the word Gehenna that we use sometimes in the Old Testament for hell, it's comparing this place with the eternal place of judgment. But they would place things in the burning white-hot arms of this brass idol and allow them to be burned up and to fall down. And eventually, we know this from biblical history, but also from extra-biblical history, people began to sacrifice their oldest children and then some of their other children to the god Molech. And they would take these babies, while they were still alive, comforting and nurturing them and then placing them into the white-hot arms of this god Molech, allowing them to be destroyed. A horrible thing. You can't imagine such a thing. Manasseh is the first king that we see from Israel, from Judah, who did such a thing. But he offered his children. Why? Because the god Molech, if you sacrificed a lot to him, it was thought that it would give you power. And you might think, oh boy, how stupid that is. And yet, think about what we sometimes sacrifice our children for, the way we neglect them so that we can do something to make us more powerful. It's not all that far off from what people do today, but it's a horrible thing that happened, and Manasseh certainly is deserving of the title the greatest sinner of all the kings. But he also practiced soothsaying. Soothsaying was it literally means to be clouded over. And it was the practice of magic. Now, it's not saying that anyone who does a magic trick, who conceals things and is tricky, you know, is automatically a bad person. But back then, often, the false religions would develop the practice of magic. By the way, it's why the wise men from the East, who are called magi, that's where that all comes from, because they developed this ability to trick people. And so he was using that in order to deceive people and lead them away from the Lord. Now, as we look at all of these occultic practices, it's important for us to point out that there is real power that Satan has. But Satan always exaggerates his power. And so quite often, he has to resort to tricks because he's not good at doing whatever he wants, because he can only do what God allows him to do. So there are times when Satan does something and it's legitimately from him. But there are a lot more times when he fakes it, and that's why he's called the father of lies. And one of the ways he did it was by faking these tricks, using misdirection, smoke and mirrors in order to fool people into believing in this superstition. And so Manasseh was involved in that, called soothsaying here. It also says that he used witchcraft. That's a word that literally means to whisper. And this was when they would start mumbling and they would prognosticate. They would predict the future. Sometimes perhaps knowingly, other times just that power of suggestion, phonies. You know, there may be times when a demon allows someone to make a prediction of the future, but it's always a guess, because Satan doesn't know the future except as God has revealed it. And so again, when they're telling their stories, when they're predicting the future, it's not some spooky, powerful thing. It's goofy. Every year, I like to buy the National Enquirer around the end of the year, because they have all their psychic predictions, and you can see what all these people say are going to happen in the next year. Like 99% of the stuff isn't going to happen, and it's kind of fun to save them just to see, oh, look, here's what they said. That's the best the devil can do, really. These are the superstars of the Psychic Friends Network. And you remember when that was a big deal, the Psychic Friends Network was dominating television. It's not out there anymore. They went bankrupt, actually, and I don't know why they couldn't have predicted that, but it did. But this is what Manasseh was doing, a little fortune telling, a little magic, hey, look at my fingers. And so he was caught up in this stuff. It says that he also used witchcraft and sorcery. So consulting mediums, that is trying to communicate with the dead, all of this spiritual activity, really, and also when it talks about communicating with these mediums, the way they would do it is they would have a bottle, and they would do their little incantations, and then a voice would come out of the bottle. The word there actually is literally bottling, and of course what it was is ventriloquism. A lot of the times. That's why when Saul went to the witch at Endor and he wanted her to bring back Samuel so he could talk to him, and she like did her little tricks, and she was probably, you know, her lips weren't moving, and all of a sudden he actually shows up, and the witch was so freaked out she fell over backwards. She was like, whoa. That kind of tips you off that this witch wasn't, you know, often we say, oh, they were using demons, and there could have been an element of that, but if it was demons, I don't think she would have been that shocked when it worked. The fact is, you know, she was Charlie McCarthy, you know, Edgar Bergen, just making a voice come out of a dish, and people would do what it says. They would listen to it. And so Manasseh was using all of this stuff. If it was demonic, hey, I'm sure he played along with that. But he also primed the pump and made it happen. And I just want to remind you, there aren't these two great powers in the universe, the power of God and the power of Satan, and they're battling it out. Satan's a liar. He's a poser. He's a pretender. He's faking it. The Bible tells us that in the end, when we see Satan, the people of the world are going to go, that's it? This is the one who's been hassling us all these years? And so Manasseh opted for that weakness. Now, if what I'm saying is that it's all just superstition and it's so much of it's pretending, although again, I'm saying some of it is literally demonic as well, but if most of it's just that way, isn't it kind of harmless? No, it's not. It's horrible. God always commanded to stay away from all of this stuff. Now, again, not somebody doing tricks, you know, with their finger being cut off. It's people who are using this for guidance rather than turning to God. So why is it so bad? Why is it such a big deal? I'll tell you. Because anything that causes us to rely on something other than the voice of God is going to lead us astray. And you might today not even think about going and consulting a fortune teller, you know, going down to you know, the place with the red palm and going in and going, okay, tell me what the future holds. But who do we listen to? Who is leading our lives? I'd suggest to you that if you're living your life by Dr. Phil or Oprah or, you know, anything else other than God leading you, you're being led astray. It's just as seriously wrong. It's just as dangerous. And so, but here Manasseh, it's the ultimate grossness of the king of Judah. They're in Jerusalem, and he's trying to rely on everything except opening his life up to God and being led by God. And boy, he was a sinner, all right. He was awful. God said he even set up a carved, well, there in the end of verse 6, after it says he consulted mediums and spiritists, he did much evil in the sight of the Lord to provoke him to anger. God was getting fed up. And it said he even put a carved image of an idol in the house of God, there right inside the temple. The other ones were out in the courtyard. This was put right inside there. And he goes on to say, this was a place that God said, here's where I want to meet with you. And this evil king instead goes, okay, I think I'll put an idol in there. And for every one of us, we have to decide what our idols are. Not many of us will worship a piece of wood. But what is it that we're living our life for? Where is it that we get our leading and guiding? Is it something as silly as a fortune cookie? Is it something as foolish as what star you were born under? Is it something as dumb as following a star on television, listening to what they have to say and taking your leading from that? I'm not paranoid or superstitious at all. In fact, this week when I ate in a Chinese restaurant earlier this week in a Chinese fast food place, I popped open my fortune cookie and it was kind of weird. I just spoke last Sunday on how important it is that we just get rid of the extra things in our lives and simplify our lives. And my little fortune said, your efforts at simplifying your life will be blessed. I'm like, so can God speak through fortune cookies? I don't know, but I just want to hear from God. So he was messing up, polluting the house of God. And then in verse 9 it says, so Manasseh seduced Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. He was supposed to be their leader, but instead he led them astray to do more evil than the nations whom the Lord had destroyed before the children of Israel. Manasseh was as bad as they get. He not only ruined his own life, he was ruining the lives of others and leading them astray. Hebrew history tells us that he was the one who killed Isaiah, cutting him in half, cutting him asunder, probably referenced in Hebrews 11 when it says some of them were sawn asunder. That's probably a reference to when Manasseh cut up Isaiah the prophet, one of the greatest prophets in the history of Israel, the prophet that brought us all those incredible messianic prophecies there in chapters 52 and 53 and 55, and he killed him. by the way, in first service, I don't want you to miss out on this, because in first service, I mean, I had a long night last night, and I was tired, and I talked about Isaiah, and somehow I flashed over, and I said, and he was there on the Mount of Transfiguration. That was Elijah. I get all confused, so. Now it'll be on both tapes, though. I just wanted to make sure of that. But so he led the people astray. He was an evil, sinful, horrible man. And the Lord spoke to Manasseh in verse 10 and his people, but they would not listen. They wouldn't listen. He was an awful guy. He was as bad as anyone who's ever walked the face of the earth. He was like a Saddam Hussein or someone like that, where it's like, oh, what an awful guy to destroy his own people like that, to do what he did. And when we look at someone like this, we feel like, oh, I hope they got some pictures of him in his underwear. That'll be good. He's just an awful person. But look how God dealt with him. And the beginning of this is what's inevitable when you live a life of sin. It says, therefore, the Lord brought upon them the captains of the army of the king of Assyria. The Assyrians were cruel people. They had already captured the northern tribes. And they took Manasseh with hooks. That word literally is nose hooks. They made these big brass fish hooks, and they would hook them in your nose, and then they'd pull you along as they took you into captivity. Not only that, they bound him with brass chains, bronze fetters. The brass that he had been worshiping, the brass that upon which he had killed his own children, that was what chained him, and they carried him off to Babylon. And now, something else happened. But up until this point, you see him in prison and you go, yep, that's what happens to sinners. People who really mess their lives up, they end up with a hook in their nose. They end up being disgraced and discarded, and there they are. And we think, good, Manasseh had that coming. I hope they really yanked on those things. I hope when the hook ripped out, they had to hook it back in again. I'd like to see him hook it on other parts, you know. And we get all caught up in the, oh, come on. And we get all caught up. And we're like, yeah, Manasseh's getting what he has coming to him. And we see, boy, how does God respond to sin? Bam! He responds, all right, he nails you. But keep reading. Now, verse 12, when he was in affliction, he implored the Lord his God, and he humbled himself greatly before the God of his fathers and prayed to him, and God received his entreaty, heard his supplication, and brought him back to Jerusalem into his kingdom. And then Manasseh knew that the Lord was God. And it goes on to say, for the rest of his life, he tried best he could to undo all the damage that he had done.
Hey, thanks for joining us today for The Balanced Word with our pastor and teacher, Dave Rolfe. We're going through 1st and 2nd Chronicles, and stay with us for more teaching from Pastor Dave. These programs are available by podcast at thebalancedword.com. Again, thebalancedword.com. We'd also like to offer you Pastor Dave's Through the Bible series on a USB thumb drive for a gift of $20 or more. Go through the Bible with Dave by ordering this special series today. Call 949-362-7475 or go to thebalancedword.com. Your gifts help to make these shows possible on stations like this one all across the nation. So thank you for standing with us with either a one-time gift or ongoing monthly support. Donations can be made at thebalancedword.com. Or again, call 949-362-7475. Have you seen Pastor Dave's one-minute messages? Watch and listen to those at thebalancedword.com and even join our mailing list so you can have them delivered to you each day. You can also watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. We'd love to have you join us for a Sunday service at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our service times on Sunday morning are now at 8 and 10. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And you can watch our live stream there too, ccpacifichills.org. If we can pray for you in any way, we ask that you contact us through thebalancedword.com or call us at 949-362-7475. We sure are glad when God is gracious to us, but what about others? Here's Pastor Dave once again.
I'm not a Manasseh fan. And when I see this, there's something inside of me that's like, oh man, he gets in jail, he's treated like this, and then he repents. And they put him back on the throne. And I suspect there were righteous people in Judah who looked at this and goes, what? Manasseh's coming back? I don't care if he said he repents. Of course he repented. He was in misery. But look at his heart. He's not the kind of person who deserves to be here in Jerusalem with us. He doesn't deserve to rule anymore. And so often, if we're honest with ourselves, there are certain people that we feel are such horrible sinners that we don't really want them to receive God's grace.
We'll finish up this message on how God deals with sinners next time on The Balanced Word with Dave Roth, a presentation of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.